Welcome to Canary in a Cornfield, a podcast from the Harkin Institute for Public Policy and Citizen Engagement, where we explore how the policies that shape our food and farming systems impact our health, our communities, and our future. As most of our listeners probably know, the Harkin Institute was founded upon the retirement of longtime public servant and Iowa legend Tom Harkin in order to continue doing high-quality work on the policy issues that were important to him. I am really happy today to be joined by Tim Wagner, who is someone who is incredibly active in fighting for water quality in Iowa. He is on the Decora Sustainability Coalition and also on the Winnesheek Conservation Board, but that doesn't really even capture how much he does. He's just everywhere in the state advocating on behalf of cleaning up our waterways. So, Tim, thank you so much for joining me today.
You bet, Adam. Happy to help and glad to be a part of this.
So one of the main things I wanted to talk about today that we'll get to in a second is the importance of the IIHR monitoring network and the continuous sensors more generally. But I think it's also helpful to hear a little bit about your background and your journey and why you're so passionate about this issue. Would you mind starting with a biography about how you got so involved?
Sure. There's no doubt that I am grounded in my background, which I grew up on a small family farm over in Hancock and Kossuth County in north central Iowa, so right in the heart of the Des Moines Lobe. And I spent a lot of time growing up helping my dad, you know, with row crops and livestock production and so forth and so on. And he retired, my parents retired and sold the farm in 1996. And I was the only one out of five kids who had any possible inclination wanting to take the farm over. And I just made a conscientious choice. I didn't want to do that for a variety of reasons, but I won't go into that here. But anyway, there's no doubt that my upbringing on a small Iowa family farm had a profound impact on who I am even today in my later senior years, if you will. And eventually, I won't go into the details of my career, other than I spent the last 5 years before I retired as the agricultural specialist, if you want to call it that, for the Isaac Walton League, the national organization, working in both Iowa and Illinois, and spent a lot of time advocating for conservation policies, either through the Farm Bill or just independent practices, really centered around regenerative practices such as no-till and cover crops and so forth. And did a lot of presentations and worked a lot with a wide variety of different organizations working on either ag and or water quality related issues. And that included also a fair amount of time working with folks in Des Moines on trying to get some reasonable soil health legislation passed within the Iowa legislature. And we were never really successful in getting anything put into code. But I think we were successful in a lot of ways of really creating awareness within the larger public across the state of Iowa in terms of understanding the issues of how industrial agriculture has changed and how it is having profound impacts on our water and natural resources in Iowa and ultimately public health. And I bring a level of personal commitment to this in the sheer fact of the story I've told many times that I lost my oldest sister to a very aggressive, rare form of bladder cancer in 2016. She was diagnosed literally 3 months after she retired in 2014. And she died almost a year to the day after she was first diagnosed. And she fought a hard battle with the fine folks at Methodist Hospital Cancer Clinic, but in the end, she couldn't beat it, and she lost the battle. And it was shortly after that I was given privy to this large study that came out of the University of Iowa, typically called the Jones Study, which looked at exposure to higher level of nitrates to postmenopausal women in Iowa. And it drew a pretty significant link between the exposure in bladder cancer and leukemia in that particular demographic. And my sister felt right in the center of that demographic and in that study. So I remain convinced today that's what contributed to her illness and ultimately her death. And so it's personal, but it's also very much the love of the land and appreciating the landscape that Iowa still has, and the appreciation of the farming lifestyle and the creating an ability for an independent farmer to do things the right way and do things not only for their bottom line, but also for the land. And I believe those two are inseparable. So that's why I continue to volunteer my time today in retirement working on these issues, because it's just so important to me and everybody, really.
I appreciate you sharing that story and how much work you've done in setting the stage for these conversations that we're having now in terms of the connection between industrial agriculture and public health. So one of the things I wanted to drill down with you about is the water situation in your part of the state, Decorah. So I heard Professor Larry Weber, who's the head of the IIHR Center at the University of Iowa, which runs this nitrate monitoring network, speak recently. And so for people who don't know, the Iowa legislature defunded this water monitoring network 2 years ago. The Walton Family Foundation jumped in and said they would fund it for a couple of years, but that they couldn't fund it beyond those 2 years. And so now we're in a situation where we might lose a significant portion of this monitoring network. And anyways, Professor Weber, during his presentation, specifically mentioned Decorah, which is the area you live in, as a place that where the importance of this network stands out. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about that. And maybe first of all, could you describe the karst region and what's special about the geology of where you're at in terms of how that affects water quality and why it might be different from other areas?
You bet. Decorah in Winneshiek County sits right on the very edge of what's known as the Driftless Region, which is a large area that encompasses a large chunk of southwest Wisconsin, southeast Minnesota, northeast Iowa, and just a tiny sliver of northwest Illinois. And the Driftless Region is mostly defined by the fact that the glaciers didn't come down this far and just erode them smooth, like within the Des Moines Lobe, like in central Iowa. So a lot of that terrain just remained hilly valleys, lots of rivers and streams. But the other really defining factor of the Driftless Region is the karst geology, which is limestone, but it's very porous in nature, very porous. You can drive anywhere in Decorah and you can see people who have chunks of karst limestone rocks in their front yards because people are just infatuated with how this stuff looks. And literally, you can take a chunk of this stuff and take a glass of water and dump it on top and you see it come right through because the stuff is so porous. That has both advantages and disadvantages in terms of being able to feed the underground aquifers, which we all depend on, but it also it expedites the ability of water to go through. And if water is carrying contaminants, it provides direct conduit right into the aquifer if there's certain pollutants that are in that water stream without any hesitation. I've heard of studies that environmental studies up at Luther College have done where they've gone and they've found areas where they can dump this colored dye into a small creek. And they know that this creek is feeding a spring on a bank a mile and a half away. And they can literally dump this blue or green dye and they can see it coming out of this spring less than an hour later. It moves that fast through the karst geology. So it has its benefits and it has its downfall. But because of that geology, we in this region is sensitive to the things that we are doing on the landscape. That includes some of the practices of what we're seeing in large-scale industrial agriculture, whether there's fertilizer, manure applications, whatsoever. And also the fact that the karst geology, just because of the nature of the landscape, we have all these cold water streams in the karst region. And these little tiny cold water streams are great habitat for a variety of trout species. They thrive on this because it's typically clean water and it's cold. Very suitable for various trout species like brown, rainbow, and brook trout, native brook trout. And so these species of fish are really good indicators of what's going on with our water quality in terms of other things besides just nitrates. Bottom line, it's a very sensitive landscape. And also, people enjoy it for that reason. That's why people like living here, recreating here. So when Larry Weber talks about the need to protect the Upper Iowa River and the watershed, he knows exactly what he's talking about. It's really a special place.
Yeah, it's also renowned for, in Iowa, really beautiful rivers and streams.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But as you mentioned, it comes with this extra sensitivity. So can you describe then how agricultural practices, have they impacted the water specifically in Decorah or nearby areas?
We're right smack dab in the middle of several small streams that are tributaries to the Upper Iowa. And because the city of Decorah is the main source of drinking water, is a series of very shallow wells that literally sit right adjacent to the river, right here in town. They only go about 60 to 80 feet deep. And even though they're tapping water from the aquifer, it's pretty common knowledge that the river itself is having some pretty significant influence on the water in that aquifer, because it's literally all right there. And so we've had some incidents up here where people have seen some major things of concern. One of the biggest ones and most recent was just about a year ago, a little over a year ago, there was a manure spill from a sizable dairy operation about 5 miles southwest of Decorah. And the manure spill drained into a little sub-drainage creek that eventually found its way into Dry Run Creek. And Dry Run Creek is one of the main tributaries into the Upper Iowa River. In fact, it joins the Upper Iowa River right at the city park on the west side of town, where a lot of people come and camp and fish and whatever. And when this spill happened, it wasn't reported by the operator. It was discovered by a friend of mine who happened to be out there on Dry Run Creek and happened to start noticing dead fish floating. And he immediately notified the DNR, and they came and did an investigation and realized where the source was coming from. Long story short, this operator was fined by the DNR to the tune of about $38,000 and was directed to do some major changes to his operation to prevent this from happening again. But in the process, it came to the knowledge of people in the community that this spill particularly had an influence on the nitrate levels in the Upper Iowa River, which, of course, again, is probably closely related to our drinking water. And at the time this spill, within 2 to 3 months after the spill happened, we were still getting citizen readings of nitrates in excess of 10, the federal standard. There was reports of readings upwards around 20 micrograms per liter, which is really off the charts. And so we always try to find a silver lining in events like this. And I think the silver lining in this is it brought to the attention of a lot of people, both city officials and residents, that we have a very vulnerable source of drinking water for roughly 8,000 people, that we need to be looking at ways that we can really protect this water source. And it just happened to coincide with all the awareness coming through across the state. Last summer, of course, the CISA report was released from Polk County Board of Supervisors, and reports started coming out in the media about Iowa's high cancer rates and so forth. So this huge bubble of awareness began to come up at the same time. And that's a good thing. That's really a good thing. And people started looking at this and thinking, okay, what do we need to be doing here in Decorah to protect our drinking water and protect the health of Decorah residents? And that's where we are right now. And I'm on the Decorah Sustainability Commission, and I happen to sit on the subcommittee of Air and Water. And there's two other really smart, intelligent women who are on this committee with me, both still in their professional lives, but extremely diligent. And we started talking about this and what we might want to do as a Sustainability Commission to alert the city council and Decorah city leaders on this issue and try to figure out what we could do, what needed to be done to protect Decorah. And lo and behold, somebody said the Sustainability Commission has a budget and there's a fair amount of money there that's not being utilized. Why don't we propose appropriating some money to fund these monitors?
And I guess before we talked about that, I wanted to just set the stage by asking you, especially since you used to work for Isaac Walton League. So there's different ways of trying to test the nitrate levels in the water. There's the sensory monitoring network. There's citizens using test strips. There's the DNR, ambient water monitoring program, where they check it maybe once a month or something like that. And so I guess I was wondering, could you talk a little bit about all the different ways in which people have tried to measure nitrate in the Decorah area and how effective they are?
Yeah, a friend of mine who is a part-time teacher, she's semi-retired, but she still teaches elementary kids and stuff, but she's a real advocate for citizen science, and she's been actually using the Isaac Walton League, the Nitrate Watch program, for quite a few years, enlisting volunteers. And anybody can go on Isaac Walton League's website and find the Nitrate Watch program, and they will literally send you this little plastic tube of these strips that anybody can go out, and it's very simple. You just dip them in the water, and then you compare it to the chart in the back of the tube, or you have an app on your phone and you want to use that. But, and then Isaac Walton League is also a partner in this national website where you can go and you can plug in the information of where you took your reading. You can upload a photograph and plug in the nitrate reading on it. It goes on to a large Google Maps area of the entire U.S. And citizens have been doing this for a long time here. And when this manure spill happened last year, it really caused an uptick in people very interested in this. So suddenly, she's getting a lot more volunteers wanting to do this and participate. It's a really good tool for just getting people engaged on the issue and give them an opportunity to feel like they're doing something about a problem they might be concerned about. The difference between this and what the monitors that Larry Weber runs through the IIHR program at the University of Iowa, those are stationary monitors, and they're highly scientific and very well calibrated. And they pretty much remove most of the variables that can come into play that affect this kind of a scientific approach. Whereas if you're just a volunteer out there and you depend on a range of volunteers to dip strips, it's great to get people engaged, but there's so many other variables that come into play. What's the weather like? Did they not handle the strip right when they dipped it into the water? Did they not read it correctly? There's all kinds of variables that come into play. Where these highly calibrated scientific monitors are permanently in place on the bank of the river, and they're taking readings all the time, continuously, and they're updating every 15 minutes. And the other good thing about that program is the information is live, and anybody can go onto the website and see what the monitor is reading at this particular time, any monitor throughout the state. And I think they at one time they had up to about 70 of these in place, and I think they might be down around 65 or something across the state. But they're like, I guess I would call them, when it comes to water quality monitoring for real scientific research, these are the Cadillac of monitors. And the other factor, too, that plays into this is the data that comes from these kinds of monitors are legal. In other words, they can be used in legal proceedings if someone, some organization, whatever, wants to take legal action. They have to go to court. This is the data that's going to hold up under court scrutiny. It's a big difference between that and just the volunteers using strips.
Do you know much about the DNR ambient water monitoring program?
What I've seen is a lot of them are in lakes, not on rivers. Some of them are on rivers, some of them are on lakes in different locations. The data can be really difficult to observe, and I don't believe they're making continuous reading. Mm-hmm. Like the University of Iowa ones are providing updated readings every 15 minutes. Where the DNR network is not. They're designed for a much different purpose than what the University of Iowa's monitors are for. What's really good about Larry Weber's program is when they designed it, one, of course, they wanted something that was going to provide reliable data, but they also really wanted to make it accessible to the public so the public could be engaged on this issue. And the DNR monitors don't follow that protocol at all. They're much more for the in-house researchers at the DNR doing periodic studies at ABC Water Lake or whatever it might be, where these, the one University of Iowa, are much more public affiliated, if you will.
Yeah. And it seems like your story about that manure spill highlights the importance of being able to have information really immediately and for the public to notice things right after they happen rather than finding out weeks later that there were elevated levels. So you talked about this a little bit already. The Sustainability Coalition and Decora decided that the sensory network was important enough to pitch in $17,000 from the budget this year to cover it. Can you say a little bit more about how you came to that decision and why it's so important for your area?
There again, I think this whole incident last year with this manure spill upstream on the Dry Run Creek, which feeds the upper Iowa, it created enough awareness within the community that we needed to be more diligent about protecting Decorah's water quality source. And people just suddenly, folks were talking about it. And the Sustainability Commission that I sit on, we had just last year, one of our, when we were appointed, we were established and appointed by the city of Decorah, by the city council, before I came on, but probably at least 4 or 5 years ago. And one of the things, the main thing we were commissioned to doing was to put together a sustainability plan for the city of Decorah. And a lot of effort went into this where we talked about things that needed to be done to improve things like walkability for the community, proper management of trees and vegetation for cooling effects from summertime heat, noise ordinances, and all these kind of things that make the quality of life a little bit better for the residents. And when I got asked to be on the commission, I said, I have direct interest in both air and water quality, and that's where I'd like to put my efforts. So they said, sure, we can put you on the committee. And it just so happens that two of my fellow members on this particular subcommittee have very similar backgrounds and interests in the same thing. And a good friend of mine who has his PhD in water and waste management, who lives here in town, he started looking at the Decorah City had put together a plan, hired a consultant and put together a plan about 3 years ago to look at our wells that are situated along the upper Iowa and things that we need to do to protect those wellheads so they aren't prone to contamination. And this guy is so versed in data, and he starts looking at this stuff and starts pulling up some of the data that the city water department is pulling. And he said, we might have some issues, not only with nitrates, but some other substances such as solvents from past cleaning, dry cleaning operations and spills from area filling stations, for example, that could be possibly contaminating our groundwater sources. And so he and I started talking a lot, and because my interest is more in agricultural practices and the impact to water quality, we just put our heads together and decided maybe we need to be talking about pushing the city to do some more direct monitoring so we get more accurate and more up-to-date, more frequent data so we know really what's going on. Because the water engineers for the city, all good people doing what they need to do, but they're only complying with federal standards. The federal standards only require them to take water samples every, I think, of 3 months. And so you've got periods in there where no one's taking water samples. And when an event happens like this manure spill, it might just go through the whole system and nobody knows anything about it. So we decided maybe we need to push a little bit harder to get the city to understand what's really going on and what can we do to feel a little more assured that we've got good water coming to our residents. So that's what was a precursor to this. So I started talking to my fellow two members on the commission subcommittee, and we had several calls. And then suddenly someone said, the Sustainability Commission has a budget for a whole bunch of different things, and there's money there. It happened to coincide at the same time that Larry Weber had come up late last fall and had made a pitch to the Winnesha County Board of Supervisors to help fund maybe one or two of the monitors. So when Larry did that, and the local press covered Larry's visit and his presentation, it garnered a lot of attention. And unfortunately, people were unhappy because the supervisors decided, no, it wasn't an issue they wanted to mess with. So for whatever reason, they backed away. So we kept talking amongst ourselves with the Sustainability Commission with the city. And that's when somebody said, why don't we just go ahead and propose that we take part of our budget and at least try to fund maybe one or two of the monitors of Larry Weber's for a year. And, you know, I immediately called Larry and got him on the phone. And the four of us got on a Zoom call one day and talked about it. And we all agreed this would be a good idea. We put together a proposal, went to the city council, and made the pitch just literally last Monday of this week. And the city, 7-member city council voted unanimously to let us appropriate $17,000 to fund two of these monitors for the next year. And not only that, to understand a little bit of the geography, the two closest monitors to Decorah, one was up in Bluffton, which is about 12 miles upstream, a very popular put-in place for kayakers and tubers who want to float the upper Iowa. And then the other one downstream was at Dorchester, which is probably about another 12 miles downstream or more. And that's where IIHR have had two of the most active monitors on the upper Iowa within the realm of Decorah City. And we were talking to him, and they said, if you really wanted to, the USGS has a gauge station right there in the city of Decorah on the upper Iowa River, literally less than 100 yards from two of the main wellheads. Mm-hmm. Why don't we take the monitor from Bluffton and put it on that gauge station? And then you can get more closely aligned data with what's going on right adjacent to your wellheads. Great, let's do that. So that was our final proposal, and that's what they're going to do. So we are in the process right now of getting an invoice from Larry Weber. It's going to go to city council, the city manager, and he's going to approve it. And they're going to, and I think they typically put these monitors back in place around mid-April. They don't leave them in place during the winter, just simply because of possible damage from ice and so forth. So I think they're in the process of getting this one from Bluffton to move down to Cora and get it up and going here by the end of the month.
I think that does a nice job of showing how engaged and informed citizens like yourself and like a lot of people in Decorah, which of course it's a special town because Luther College is there, and there's a lot of interesting people. But the reason you had to step up for funding this was because the state legislature is indicating that they might not fund it. And so I guess what I'm wondering is, what does that mean for other locations around Iowa who don't have as engaged citizenry as Decorah? What would have happened to Decorah if you didn't happen to have this in place and the state didn't step up?
We all went into this knowing that this was only a temporary bridge. We made that very clear to Larry, and Larry didn't come with any more expectations than just for a year's worth of funding. Everybody knows that the legislature has to step up on this deal. And by not doing so, they are neglecting their responsibilities to the citizens of Iowa. This is not a political issue. As much as some want to make it that way, it is not. Community health, individual health, has no political boundaries whatsoever. And that's really what we're talking about here. If you don't have clean water, boy, you're just in a world of hurt. Everybody that I talk to has already heard the statistics about Iowa's cancer rates and the affiliation with high nitrate levels. And granted, yes, we have a radon problem in Iowa. We've had a radon problem in Iowa for centuries. That just comes with the territory. this is something fairly new within the last 25 or 30 years that we hadn't been experiencing before. And when I used to give presentations working on agricultural issues for Isaac Well League, and I gave a lot of presentations to groups, and I would always finish my presentation with a picture of my sister in my PowerPoint. And then I would tell her story. And then I would simply end my talk by saying, everybody in this room, I don't care whether there's 10 of you or 50 of you, everybody in this room knows somebody who either has cancer now or who has already lost the battle with cancer. Everybody. And I never got any dispute at that or from anybody in any group I ever spoke to. Everybody agrees with that. So there again, it's not political. Let's go on that premise that everybody recognizes that we have a problem, we've got to do something about it. And the first thing we need to do to address the problem is getting good data. If we don't have that, then we're just batting with blinders on.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, this really shouldn't be that difficult. And it's just baffling to me how the legislature is so bent more on putting restrictions on books in libraries or bathroom etiquette for trans people, or it just doesn't make any sense. And they're ignoring one of the biggest issues. I believe water quality in Iowa is really, if it is a number one, it's in the top three across the state. Everywhere you go, people are talking about it.
There are a lot of differences of opinion of how involved the government should be in different aspects of life. But when it comes to something like being able to drink clean water and not have your health threatened by the water you drink, that is something that only a government agency, that's a collective action problem. It requires some larger entity to fill that role. And it seems like there's really no question that the only group that could really fill that role in the long term for Iowa would be the state government.
Yeah. And with that comes a recognition that we don't have policies in place that protect Iowans. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think IEC, Iowa Environmental Council's most recent estimates are that something like 36% of all private wells in the state of Iowa have nitrate levels well above the federal standard. That is really off the charts alarming. It really is. And you have to ask how many people are actually going and checking their well water. Most people aren't even thinking about it. We, in growing up on a kid, there was nothing more fun to do than on a hot afternoon go out and pull up the handle and hide and take the hose and take a good cold drink of cold water. It was like, and this is the best water in the world, we thought. But we can't take that for granted anymore. It's something that really needs to be addressed, and I think the legislature is really falling down in their responsibility. Yeah, we can argue all day long whether this is something that should be the state's responsibility. But if it's not the state's responsibility, who is it?
Yeah.
Because whether I'm here in Decorah, or I'm going to visit friends in Western Iowa, or I'm going to visit a high school buddy of mine in Southeast Iowa, I should be assured that if I'm going to those places, the water I pull out of their tap is safe to drink. And right now, we don't have that. And all the data clearly shows that it has very direct relationship to some of the agricultural practices that have dramatically changed since I was on the farm, dramatically. And this shouldn't be difficult to figure out and start to address. It really shouldn't be. But it takes political will.
Very well said. So you mentioned this already. So the 17,000, that's just a 1 year fund. So how are you thinking about what happens a year from now?
I think right now we're just all overjoyed with being able to get something accomplished like this. But I am thinking about it. And one of the things that I want to take on in my role as the commission member, once we've had this one monitor move where we're getting samples in frequent readings on every 15 minutes on water that's in the upper Iowa adjacent to our wells, to make that data, make sure it's available to the public, help people understand why this is important, but also help them understand that the citizens of Decorah City shouldn't be responsible for pulling up the tax dollars to keep this monitor in place. This has to go back to the legislature. So what I intend to do is to use this as a way to put even more pressure on our legislators to make sure that they understand why this is so important. I think there's probably someone in the legislature who just think, just a handful of environmentalists who want to control what we do with our lives, which of course is just poppycock. But no, this is really a public health issue, and the public deserves better responsibility from the legislators who we put in office. We're paying for these guys, these folks, to be there and address the issues that concern all of Iowans. And they're really falling down on this one. They really are.
Any suggestions you have for people who are listening who want to take action? What would you recommend for people?
Yeah, I would encourage people, first and foremost, the easy thing people can do is get the free nitrate water strips from the Isaac Walton League. Anybody can go on their website and request the kit and start testing on your own, whether it's a creek that runs next to your property, or you can test your own drinking water. I do that probably once a month. I have my own RO system that I put in myself, reverse osmosis system that I put in about 4 years ago. And when I became even more aware of what was going on, I decided, what can I do to protect myself initially? So my wife and I spent the money and put it in our own system. And I can take these test strips and I can test a glass of coming out of one versus the other on a day-to-day basis. And you typically, you're going to see a difference. It depends on how many nitrates are in the system, but sometimes there's no difference at all. Other times, there's a vast difference between what I'm getting through the RO system versus coming straight from the tap. But that's just basic knowledge, help people understand the complexity of the problem, if you will. And then take that information and make it public. Go talk to your city council people, your county supervisors. We've got an issue with this. And then relate it to what Larry Weber's program has been doing in Iowa and why that is so important. Use your own personal experiences and use that to motivate the next person you talk to or your legislator, because those personal stories are what moves people more than anything else. And that's something I learned years ago in all my environmental organizing I used to do. Give people a reason why they should care about this. Make it as personal as you can. And then they feel a sense of attachment and then they will take action. And that's really, this whole water quality thing is a perfect platform for that strategy, because it just enables people very easily to get engaged. Doesn't require an investment, requires very little time, and just start talking about it. And again, I encourage anybody who wants to get engaged, make sure they understand this is not political. Some want to make it that way for their advantage, but it's not political. And anybody who tries to claim it is, they're blowing smoke. Public health should not be political. It just should not be. I'm working with a couple of volunteers, and we've started collecting weekly samples, taking nitrate reading samples every week at 5 different locations around Decorah, including the Upper Iowa, and then 4 little creeks that come into the Upper Iowa. And we worked with the local publisher of the Decorah Leader, which is our weekly newspaper, a tremendous newspaper. And we're now buying little small business card size ads that are running in the paper every week. And they show what these readings are that people are taking. And they just ran the first time yesterday. But the response we're getting from it is just astounding. People are seeing this. Oh, what's this about? And there again, even though we know that these particular test strips and these readings that we're getting are not legal in terms of comparing them to what is coming out of the University of Iowa's program, it's an educational tool. And it gives people an opportunity to be engaged. And it's creating more awareness, which really is the end goal. And it's fun. And people are really excited. I put out a thing on my Facebook page with a photo of the ad that we ran this week and just said, if anybody wants to donate to help pay for the ads, here's how you can contribute. I got literally just by the 24 hours, I collected $240 or something. People just, yeah, I'll do that. People are excited. People want to be engaged. People want to help.
That's great. Yeah. And it seems reproducible in other places because I definitely will see people post results from their own nitrate tests and get shared a lot and a lot of comments and discussion.
Yeah.
And then putting it in the local media, that's a really smart idea too.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just trying to create more awareness, get people to understand they cannot take what's coming out of their tap for granted. They just can't. It's to their benefit and the health of their families to be knowledgeable and understand what's going on and then take whatever action is necessary.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Tim. I really enjoy talking to you always, including on podcasts. So really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
You bet. Glad to do it, Adam. Thanks for your time.
That's it for this week's episode of Canary in a Cornfield. Just a reminder, you can find the Harkin Institute on social media, which includes X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and find our webpage at harkininstitute@drake.edu. And this podcast is also hosted by Substack Canary in a Cornfield, which will include some additional links and resources that go beyond what's in the episode. So thank you all for tuning in, and I will be talking with you soon.